Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm talking about everything from sex positions to performance in the bedroom to the way our brains work. Topics include performance issues. It's not just an old man thing. Why you should love yourself and your vulva. How to last longer when using condoms. And are we designed to be monogamous? All this and more. Thanks for listening. Let me tell you about Aptiv. It's an audio-based workout app that has totally changed the way I exercise. I'll tell you more about it in just a bit, but if you want to check it out and save 30% on a new membership, go to aptiv.com/Emily. That's aptiv.com/Emily. You often ask me about new ways to connect with your partner and keep things super hot. Well, I've got the solution that will add adventure to your sex life in all the right ways. The Jive from WeVibe is the perfect way to experience discreet pleasure that you can wear alone or have a partner control. It's an insertable vibe that allows you to feel pleasure wherever and whenever. And when you pair it with the WeConnect app on your phone, you can cycle through the Jive's 10 vibration patterns. Wear it on your date night or running errands. Hey, there's no rules. It's also fun to build custom vibes so you experience different sensations or hand control over to your partner and let them surprise you, whether they're across the table or across the country. And because it's from WeVibe, you know this thing is packing the power. To get your Jive, visit sexwithemily.com/WeVibe. That's my site, sexwithemily.com/WeVibe today.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com, check out our website, and also you still have some time to enter our Masturbation Month contest. Because I know it's June, that's cool. We extended it to June 18th, and I want to know, how has masturbation benefited your life? Your sex life? What has it done for you? Email feedback at sexwithemily.com by June 18th to enter. And of course, we're going to give you some super sexy prizes. I love the detail. I love your stories. I love it all, but it really helps when you keep them short. And as always, follow us on social media. It's all at sexwithemily on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all those places that you frequent. So, sex in the news. Here's what's going on this week. Researchers found that whether a person identifies as transgender could be tied to how their brains develop in the womb. So the Netherlands analyzed brain activity of young transgender people using MRI scans, and they found that the transgender adolescents' brains work the same as cisgender participants of the same gender. Okay, what does this mean? So cisgender is a term that, for example, means that if you were born with a vagina, you identify as a woman, whereas a transgender person would have been born with a penis also identifies as a woman. So basically, if you thought that this was a choice, like someone just thought, you know, if a cisgender person, you know, boy born with a penis was like, oh, I think it'd be cool to wear a woman and wear dresses. What they're saying here is, no, this is actually their brains work the same way as the gender they later identify with when they're old enough to identify. So it's kind of like, do people choose to be left-handed? Right? No, we're born either left or right-handed. Sure, you could make them right-handed and they could get really good at it, but they'd fundamentally be left-handed. So I thought this was common knowledge because I know a lot of, for example, gay people, they say, well, I always knew that I was, you know, gay or I was lesbian, and kind of just like transgender people, same thing. Like they, it's not a choice. It's not like they were like, oh, all of a sudden I think this would be fun. It's actually the way their brains are wired. So I think it should be common knowledge. It makes sense that, you know, people who identify as a woman or a girl from a young age would have a brain that works like a woman's brain, but I guess it is not. So I'm glad people are doing these kind of studies to back it up. Speaking of backing up, let's talk about doggy style, because why not? because I know a lot of you love doggy style position, and I was recently quoted an article that I think you guys will like because, listen, we've got limited sex positions, right? I mean, there's base positions, right? Like doggy style and missionary, and there's a few others, and then there's variations on them. So I think people are like, positions get boring, so here's a few tips to make doggy style more intimate. And I know it's also the go-to position for a lot of couples. I think with these tips I'm going to give you actually go for any couples and go for two guys, two women, and heterosexual couples. So let me just say that ahead of time. And I think that, again, doggy style is the go-to position for a lot of couples. I think that a lot of men love that it offers like a really good view and they're in control of the depth and the speed of the penetration. But how do you make it more intimate? How do you make it so everyone's really connected during this position? So some tips I have. The sandwich doggy style position. So if you're the receiver, you're lying flat on the bed on your stomach with your legs closed, and then your partner gets on top of you and your partner's legs are outside of yours as your partner enters from behind. So this position is less about like thrusting in and out, and it's more about really connecting with your partner. And also for women, having your legs closer together, if you're on the bottom lying on your stomach, it offers tighter friction, which can make it more enjoyable for women. I know that this is something that I had to learn later in life, but I'm so glad I did, that you can easily like pump your Kegel muscles and your pelvic floor muscles and tighten it, and it can feel really, really good. So offers tighter friction when your legs together, and also your partner's hands are free to drape over your hands or hold your hands, and also your partner's face will be close to the back of your neck, and you know they can whisper sweet nothings in your ear. The neck is a killer erogenous zone. So that's a fun variation of it. There's also the rear view. So if you're thinking, oh God, doggy style, it's just, you know, we're not looking at each other and it just feels so alone, you can actually make eye contact. So here's a little upgrade. When you're in the typical doggy style position, turn your neck so you can connect visually and look into your partner's eyes as the thrusting is happening. I think that we're afraid for eye contact a lot during sex because it just makes us vulnerable. I think eye contact in a lot of ways makes us vulnerable. You know, those people you meet, even not that you want to have sex with, but you meet out in the world and you're like, why aren't they looking at me? I think we're all afraid of it, but many of us can be. But there's a great intensity and closeness that comes when you actually can look into your partner's eyes during sex. So this might be the connection that you need during doggy style to take it to the next level. Also, you guys, another doggy style tweak is to make sure that everyone's having a good time and getting off. Because a lot of times for women, it doesn't, if you're the receiver, you're not going to have as much clitoral stimulation as you'd like. So this is why it's great when you know your partner has their hand free, you've got two hands free, and you want to make sure that your breasts and clitoris are easily accessible for either you to touch or hopefully your partner will touch, stroke them. He can use a vibrator. He can hold in the palm of his hands. He can hit all those erogenous zones, your clitoris, the vulva, your pubic mound, all those things. So when he's thrusting it out, can bring you both to a really great orgasm. So you don't have to forego your pleasure in doggy style. So I hope this makes a lot more sense for you and makes it a lot better than before, because it's not necessarily common sense. In fact, a lot of things aren't. That's kind of like my theme for today. Another not so common, although it should be, study. Performance issues in the bedroom are not just an old man's problem. I loved this. I loved the study. I ate it all up because I think your mind's going to be a little bit blown with this and will really help you. So a study revealed that nearly 40% of men, 40% between the ages of 16 and 34 have experienced sexual performance problems in the last year. I find this so interesting because I think when we think about sexual dysfunction in men, we often link that to the men who are getting prescriptions for Viagra. And, you know, men are over 50 and they have problems with sexual function. But no, this is not the case at all. This is saying that it's actually much more widespread. And the problem is that it's underreported and understood. That's like a way to say extremely understood. It's not understood that the sexual issues these men are experiencing include lack of interest in sex. So it's not just obvious things like dysfunction where maybe, you know, you're getting hard or you're not staying hard as long as you want or coming too quickly. It actually means that these men have lack of interest in sex, lack of enjoying sex. They feel no arousal. They experience pain. And we know difficult getting or maintaining an erection or climaxing too early. So I think this is time for a really, really honest conversation about these issues. And it's way, way, way long overdue. Because when it comes to young people's sexuality, I think that we're usually focused on, you guys know this, sex education. We talk a lot about, you know, preventing STIs and unplanned pregnancies. And we never talk about like pleasure, and we never talk about what sexual health actually means for men and for women. Or we talk a lot about women's sexual challenges. Women aren't getting aroused and not having orgasms. I mean, you guys know I talk about everything here. But I think this is great because it also points to, and kind of some awareness, it points to the fact that it can also be really embarrassing for men, you know, because they're not confiding in their partners. They're not visiting their doctors. In fact, women go to doctors, they go to their general practitioners, they go to their gynecologist once or twice a year, way more often than men. And so I feel like guys are kind of like, yeah, maybe I'm not really into sex, but I'm the only guy on the planet who's not into sex. Well, it turns out, no, about 40% of men between, like I said, to the age of 34 are having the same challenges. So I love this, kind of blows it wide open for men to understand that they need to communicate about whatever's going on with them sexually, just like we all do. So sometimes just talking about it with your partner, even in saying like, hey, babe, I've just not been feeling as aroused lately, or I'm worried that I'm not performing, or whatever it is, takes the pressure off because you're not living with it alone. Because I think a lot of men suffer silently. And you know what happens when you suffer silently through any of these sexual challenges, it can really take a toll on your physical and mental health. And so, and then that just kind of perpetuates the problem when you no longer talk about it. And another level of this is that they blame the rise in sexual dysfunction among men, among young men, on easy access to porn without high quality sex ed to offer a more balanced perspective. So get this, young men who might not have a lot of experience sexually, they probably don't. The first kind of sex they ever see is in porn, right? And they have no other sex education. And then they start to have sex and then they have some kind of challenge around it, right? A sexual issue. But since we have no sex education and they're performing themselves to porn stars, this can cause early on anxiety, self-esteem issues, and make intercourse with their actual partners in real life very, very difficult. So some people say that this excessive viewing of pornography is actually a side effect of a sexual issue that's already been present in the men. So perhaps a guy's had some sexual dysfunction issues in the past, so he just turned to porn and never went back. So no matter what side you're on, if you like lean towards porn because it kind of helped you through something and then you can't have sex with your partner, or you learned about sex through porn and you just kind of stayed there, there's a lot of challenges that we're having with porn all around. And I think that the bottom line is, no matter what, either it's because men aren't communicating about their problems around sex because they feel like it makes them less manly or it's too devastating, or they're just stuck, you know, watching porn for whatever reason, this gets men trapped in this cycle of sexual dysfunction. And it also propagates the myth that sex issues are something that only guys need to worry about. Older guys, right. Okay. So the problem with this, it keeps men trapped in this cycle of sexual dysfunction, and it also propagates the myth that, oh, sex issues are the only thing that old dudes have to deal with. It's not for young guys, and so young guys are running around suffering. Get it? So if you're struggling in the bedroom, you're not alone, and I really hope that this is kind of like light bulbs going on with some guys listening or some women, you know, your friends, your partners, and you can think like, oh God, I wonder how this is having an impact on him. I wonder, I understand that lately he hasn't been getting hard in the bedroom. He hasn't been really into sex lately. Instead of blaming them, I think what women do also, a lot of times we blame ourselves. We're like, well, he must not be into me. He must not be attracted to me. He must be cheating on me. Like a lot of times, no, he's just a human being with sexual challenges like we all have at different times in our life. So I want to hear from you. What do you guys think? Have you experienced any of these issues at all? Do you want to get past them? Do you think it's porn? Is it more than that? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. Okay, let's take a quick break and give a shout out to our sponsors. Thank you for supporting them. And I'll be back and answering your questions. I've always been into working out and being healthy, but as you can probably relate, sometimes more than others. And what I've realized is that when I'm the most committed to my workouts is when I'm motivated and held accountable. Well, lately, my meditations and my workouts have been awesome. Thanks to Aptiv. It's an audio-based, music-driven workout app that has me so motivated to keep moving no matter what type of exercise I'm in the mood for. I can pick the certified personal trainer that matches my mood. And my favorite part is that their music team works with each trainer to create music playlists perfectly timed to the intensity and pace of my workout. So like I'll use it in the mornings before I run. And so first I search for music. whatever music I'm in the mood for, and second, how long I want to run or how intense I want it to be. So yesterday I was feeling hip hop. I just searched for it and boom, picked a 30-minute run with the perfect playlist, popped in my earbuds, and had an awesome run. The cool thing is I can literally use Aptiv for running, yoga, cycling, even meditation, and have super professional guidance along the way. And they add new workouts each week to the other 2,500 already available. So I'm never bored, which is huge. Subscriptions start at $14.99 a month or $99.99 for a year. And for a limited time, new members get 30% off if they get a whole year. So that's like having a personal trainer year-round for $69.99. How awesome is that? Try it today. Visit aptiv.com/Emily. That's aptiv.com/Emily. Here's a listener email I recently received, and let me tell you, it's not the only one of its kind. Hi, Emily. I'm a 38-year-old single mom who wants to get back on the dating scene, but I'm terrified. I've been dealing with bladder leakage and actually started wearing pads every day just to be safe. Between the leaking and the pads, I'm totally insecure about spontaneous intimacy with a new partner. How can I move past this? Well, first, let me tell you that she's not alone. It's actually estimated that 40 million women use pads every day for bladder leaks. Young, old, with, without kids. But let me tell you, there's nothing to be ashamed of. There are solutions though, and it's not just pads. The Apex by Pormois is an affordable device that uses gentle electrostimulation to create an extremely effective Kegel workout automatically. Not only does a strong pelvic floor help prevent the old sneeze and pee situation, it can increase the strength and frequency of your orgasms, which should also help make you want to get intimate again. Similar to the intensity that I've spoken about for years, the Apex delivers the same results without the rabbit vibrator functions, making it the perfect option for women who are sensitive to stimulation. To start using an Apex and stop relying on pads, visit pormois.com/Emily. That's pormoi.com/Emily. Okay, now we're on to your emails. I love answering your questions. It's why I exist on the planet, is to help you have better sex. So you can text Ask Emily, all one word, to 797979. Fill out the short form or go to my website, sexwithemily.com. Click the Ask Emily tab, submit your question. As always, include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Okay, this is from Chris, 29, San Diego. Hey, Emily, I've been listening to your podcast for over a year, and it's taught me a lot and got me to explore subjects I never really explored before. I was recently in a relationship with a girl who was polyamorous/open prior to me, and I did a lot of reading on the subject, in particular with the book Sex at Dawn by Christopher Ryan. I'm certain you've read the book, so I have a question for you. Knowing what I know about human biology and evolution, do you think humans are naturally prone to have more than one sexual partner at a time and that monogamy is a modern invention? And, or that polyamory was a more dominant pattern in our earlier ancestors and that modern humans are capable of both? Thanks. This is a great question. And here's what I got to say to that. You guys, Sex at Dawn is a wonderful book by Christopher Ryan that came out in about 2011, I think. And it really was a groundbreaking book about evolutionary psychology and sex and our ancestors and biology and evolution and all this stuff. So to answer your question, it's true that monogamy is a modern invention. And I do believe that it doesn't work for everybody. And so monogamy, essentially, for the last couple hundred years, is the only choice that we have in many ways. We think, okay, we got to marry someone. We got to stay with one partner for the rest of our lives till death do us part. And that works for many couples. Many couples, they work it through and that's how they get stronger, right? They're like, I'm just going to be with my partner. We're going to like make it work. And that's great. However, I think that for a lot of people, it doesn't. And I don't know, it could be evolutionarily speaking. It could just be because, you know, we're not wired that way. What I would like to see is people not being so hard on themselves and listening to what they really want before they jump into a monogamous relationship. They're like, I'm just gonna not have sex with anyone else because that's what society says. I think that the time we're living in now is a wonderful time to explore, like, what kind of relationship do I want? You know, do I want a more modern relationship, a more alternative relationship that's more open and polyamorous? I mean, I think we're capable of whatever we want, and all relationships take work. It's just because you're in an open relationship and you're like, wow, I can sleep with anyone. Believe me, it doesn't mean that life is great because you have so many sexual partners. I think a lot of this has to do with the grass is always greener. So if you think that one side or the other is going to be the answer to everything, it's not. But I do believe that, yeah, I think that I would just like people to be more open to kind of exploring themselves, not beating themselves up for having desires other than their partner. And not to think that, oh my God, I could never deal with jealousy. Like, I want to have more than one partner, but it'll never work. Because I'm here to tell you that there are really great tools. People I know in open relationships actually can work. People are married with kids and they just practice like rigorous honesty, fierce communication. And they actually, yeah, they get jealous like we all do, but they have language around it and they talk about it right away. And for some people, it's really healthy. So that's how I'm going to answer your question there, Chris. Let me know what you think. Are you trying it? Are you trying out an open relationship? Let me know. Okay, this is from Giovanna, 42 in Florida. I'm a 42-year-old single mom and I'm divorced. I've been sleeping with a 39-year-old divorced man. We just hook up and don't have plans for a relationship. He's made it clear that he's not looking for one. The sex is good, but should I continue to see him knowing it's not going to lead to anything, or should I cut all ties and move on? I'm not really sure that I want a relationship either, and I don't want to give up on the sex, but I don't want to catch any feelings either. What should I do? Okay, Giovanna, this is a great question because I think what it all comes down to is that you're trying to control things here that aren't necessarily controllable. What you can think about, though, take some time. Like, you might catch feelings. Like, this whole, like, I don't want to catch feelings. If you catch feelings for someone, that's actually a good thing, right? I think that can be a good thing if they're matching your feelings and you're talking about it. Most importantly, I have to say, Giovanna, what exactly do you want, okay? So here's the thing about dating after divorce. It's a thing. Like, you've been married for a while. Coming back, if you've been out of the dating world for 5 years, 10 years, and you're just entering now, you're like, whoa, dating apps? No one talks on the phone anymore? Like, that's one hurdle. And then also just like, wow, what's it like to date a few people, maybe even like a few people, and have sex with more than one person if you're into that thing? But I don't think that you know that yet, Giovanna. So you said he's made it clear he's not looking for the one. You start out and saying, like, you know, it's not going to lead to anything, and should I cut ties? But then you go on to say you're not sure that you want a relationship either. So I'm going to say, what do you want and what do you think you're capable of? You might not know this yet, but I want you to reframe the way you're thinking about what you're looking for, because it might surprise you, but if you're having good sex with this guy, and just because he's telling you, I don't want a relationship, and, you know, why don't you just kind of go into the relationship being really honest, communicating, being honest with them what you're thinking right now. You could say, you know what, I'm thinking of ending this relationship because of you said you want a relationship, and I'm not sure you don't want a relationship, and I'm not sure what I want right now. That might get you even closer together, but I would be honest with him, but most importantly with yourself, and challenge yourself, because you might be able to still date this guy and other people, even if your brain's going, I could never handle that, because it sounds like you're still trying to figure out what you want. The other option for you is to also say, you know what, I'm just not going to jump right back into dating. If you just got divorced, you might not even be ready yet either. So I'm just throwing that out there for you and for anyone else who's listening, who's like, I got to get back out there and do it. You only have to date when you're ready to date. So go easy on yourself. Really think about what feels good to you, not what the guys want, not what he's telling you, but what you want. And that takes some work, but that's how you're going to be able to find a satisfying relationship that you really want and that feels good to you. This is from Andrew, 35, Australia. I find I orgasm a lot quicker when wearing a condom than when I don't. I can control myself when I don't wear one, but when I do, I can't control myself. Any ideas how to last longer? Okay, well, the first thing I thought when I read this is, well, I love that you're wearing a condom. I love it. I love you guys. Wear condoms if you're sleeping around and you haven't been tested. It prevents STDs and pregnancies, okay? You guys, but most importantly, STDs. Even if you're on the pill, a woman's on the pill. Okay, so what I was thinking, Andrew, is maybe the condom doesn't fit you right. I think that guys kind of get set on a brand of condoms and they're like, oh yeah, well, it just feels weird, but it might be too tight. You might need a bigger size condom, a larger size condom. I always recommend Skin condoms. They're great. They make a king size, K-Y-N-G, and it's Skin, S-K-Y-M. You could also try masturbating with the condom on to test it and practice, you know, edging with the condom on where you like, realize the point where you're about to ejaculate and then you stop to kind of like get to the point of no return. And then you go back down again. You could also try doing your Kegel exercises, which is great for men and for women. Doing your Kegels, yes, men and women can do them. In the same way, it can also help you with ejaculatory control. But since it's only with a condom, again, I would try different sizes, try masturbating with a condom, and also try doing your Kegels and let me know how that goes. This is from Cece. Hello, I had a question in regards to one of your posts. How can one break the stigma of STDs, especially when shame is used to discourage unsafe behavior? Thanks. Okay, so I think what you're referring to here is that when we talk about the stigma around STDs, like, you know, I think what you're talking about is fear. That a lot of times we say, like, you know, we use this fear-based tactics, like, you better not get an STD, or, oh my God, you could get an STD. And I don't say this, but maybe you're reading into that, like, life could be over and it's a death sentence and all these things. But I think that it's not really so much shame. It's like this, we use these tactics, maybe your people do, so you don't get an STD. But what happens if you get one? So you're saying, like, now you're using all this fear and then you get one, how is someone's life supposed to go on? And I get that there's nothing great with having an STD, but it's also not the end of the world. Like, STDs happen, they do, everything, it happens to people. And if you get one, you can work with it. And we've talked about this a lot on the show, like how to talk to your partner about it, how you can take precautions. For a lot of STDs, you just can take a pill, like, and it's gone. Or if you have herpes, you know, you can take a daily suppressive pill, but you also have to talk to your partner about it. So use precaution when having sex and be safe. But if you have one, there's ways to work around it, you guys. That's what I got for you, sweetie. Okay, this is from Amber, 35, in Florida. Hey, Emily, this is regarding my feelings of how my vagina looks. It's so bad, I never look at it. So I came home from work and looked, and it's way worse than I ever remember it to be. It's saggy, wrinkly, and has huge long lips. It looks so beat up and worn out. It's literally the ugliest vagina I've ever seen in my entire life. I've Googled photos of labiaplasty, but some look worse after the surgery. I don't know how to get over it. This is almost like a phobia of my vag. It's so freaking ugly, and I'm bi, and I love how they look. If I ever saw a girl with one like mine, I couldn't even go through with it. I don't know what to do. My husband says he loves it, but our marriage is always on the rocks, so one day I might have to be with someone else, and I dread it. It's so gross. Okay, Amber, whoa, back up. Take a few deep breaths here. I'm gonna take a few deep breaths with you. You're totally fine. This is normal. To me, it sounds like you just looked in the mirror and freaked out. Because your husband loves it. Women, they all look different. Like, I understand. I understand that when you look at porn, they're small and tight and pink. And maybe, you know, that's the girls who are trying out for porn, or that's the angle. But that is only one kind of vulva. You should check out some of other vulvas to make yourself feel better. Don't look at labiaplasty. You do not need labiaplasty. Look up the vulva gallery. Just Google vulva gallery, and there's beautiful vulva artwork, and they're all different. Everyone is different. And, you know, I feel like you have this concern that all these people, if you ever have to go out in the world, they're not going to like your vagina and they're going to judge you. And then you just said to me, your vulva, you just said to me that if you came across one, you wouldn't love it. So you are actually the problem here. You're the one who's perpetuating this thing about some vagina has to look in some certain way in the vulva, and it looks so different. Every single one is different. Like, really, if you stood up 100 women in a room and they were all naked, every single one would look very, very different. If you put 100 porn stars in a room, they might look more similar. But if you just pulled 100 random women off the street, very different, and each one is beautiful. So I think that this is where all these challenges have come from women for loving their vulvas. But I think that we got to do some self-love here, some deep, deep self-love. Because if you're with someone in the future and they're going to look at you and they'll be like, oh, peace out, Amber, I don't love your vagina, I think that's not the person you want to be with, A. And B, God, is that really even going to happen? And if that it sounds like you're going to be that person more than anyone else, you know? And B is the same as A. If you find that person does that to you, you're out. So as long as it's working and you're having sex with your partner, your husband, although you say you're having challenges, I think that we need to love our vaginas. We need to love our bodies more. The way you're talking about yourself is really, really hateful. I'm going to go on a limb here and suggest that you've got a lot of these negative tapes running through your head about a lot of things, about your body, about your life, about your job. If not, you're lucky, because if it's just about your vagina, I can solve this. I can tell you that it's just important to do the work around your vagina, like stand in the mirror and all those, and find some things that you love about it and your husband loves it. And I would start to take your masturbation, do some mindful masturbation where you're really just, wow, I can't believe how amazing it is that I have this body part that can give me so much pleasure and so many orgasms. So I want you to just reshift this whole thing about your vulva. And I want every woman listening to do the same thing. There is no right vulva. This wasn't even a conversation, you guys. I'm telling you, before porn became so ubiquitous, this barely was even a thing. And now I get all these emails from women who are like, I don't look a certain way. And it just makes me really sad. So I just told Jamie in our office, I'm like, we have to just put pictures of vulvas all over the office. Like, I want people to walk in here and I want like vulvas. So we go, oh, I get it. Right. So anyway, I love you, Amber. And I want you to love yourself as well. It's a really good thing to work on, loving yourself. That's actually the most important work we could do. Because when you love yourself, everything else follows. Confidence, sexual confidence, being a good person, being a good human. Jealousy goes away. It's a beautiful thing. Do that. I love you all. Okay, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I love hearing from you. I love getting your questions. So please, please email me all of them. And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, volunteer Sarah, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. I know I talk a lot about sex toys for women, but not to worry, guys. Let me give you a helping hand. Well, actually, you're going to have to use your hand or your partner's hand. But let me tell you about the new Flesh Skin from Fleshlight. The Flesh Skin is a compact stroker unlike any other. It's open at both ends and has finger holes for the perfect grip. So whether you're using it on your own or letting your partner do the heavy lifting, it's the perfect addition to your bedroom activities. The combination of the comfortable grip, the ability to vary the pressure, and Fleshlight's ultra-realistic silicone will let you in on all the sex toy fun. Just grab some water-based lube and use the Flesh Skin to add a whole new range of sensations to your pleasure. Get a better grip with the Flesh Skin. Just visit sexwithemily.com/fleshlight. That's sexwithemily.com/fleshlight to order your Flesh Skin today.